Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, we remember Pearl Harbor. And also, we must recognize that we've had a Pearl Harbor of our own the last couple years. We explain what that means. And also, we have Mark Meadows, who breaks some news. He says that he will not comply with the January 6th committee. And he explains why. If you want to support our show, you can go to charliekirk.com/support. Robin Williams is a supporter. That's what it says. Robin Williams from Salem, Oregon. Thank you. Teresa from California. Adrian from Oregon, Lynn from Oregon, Rachel from California, Stuart from Tennessee, Lorraine from California, Mary from Ohio, Candace from Wisconsin, Timothy from Idaho, Melinda from California, Ginny from Oregon, Keisha from Texas, and Tracy from California. CharlieKirk.com/support allows you to get behind the work we are doing in our mission to reach millions of young people every single month. If you are inspired by our work and you want to become a team member, go to CharlieKirk.com/support. I never want to hear from a young person, Charlie, I just can't meet anybody to marry or date unless you come to America Fest. You got to get out. You got to get the blood moving. And people say, Charlie, I just can't meet anyone. Well, get off the dating apps and get to America Fest. It's important for you to expand your boundaries. And people say, Charlie, what's the best thing I could spend money on? It's not gems and jewels. It's not cars and homes. It's experiences. You see, we as human beings need to experience things, not just look at them. Tucker Carlson, Kayleigh McEnany, Greg Gutfeld, Ted Cruz, Jesse Waters, Candace Owens, Jim Jordan, Donald Trump Jr., Pete Hegseth, Madison Cawthorn, Kimberly Guilfoyle, Rand Paul, Jack Posobiec, Benny Johnson, Kat Kamick, Lauren Boebert, Matt Gaetz, Louie Gohmert, Burgess Owens, Sean Foyt, Sarah Palin, Brandon Tatum, Michael Chandler, Steve Weatherford, Cameron Haynes, Jimmy John Leotold, Andy Biggs, Byron Donalds, Devin Nunez, John Lovell, Ryan Klenker, James O'Keefe, Pastor Jack Hibbs, special performances by Brantley Gilbert, Dustin Lynch, Russell Dickerson, Ray Lynn, and Lee Greenwood. Okay, so now we have a special discount code to give you guys some money off because we're coming up against the last couple days and we are running out of tickets. But I want all of our listeners on the Charlie Kirk Show, if you guys use promo code Charlie, you guys get 25% off. That's TPUSA.com/AMFEST. I never want to hear a complaint. Well, Charlie, you know, I just can't meet anyone. It's just not working out for me. Have you got out of the house? Have you done something about that? America Fest, you will be around thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of young people who love the Lord and love the country. TPUSA.com/AMFEST. Email us your thoughts as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Hey, everybody. This episode is brought to you by my friends at ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Secure your device, anonymize your online activity, protect your action online. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Help our show out by also helping yourself protect yourself. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. I want to start. It's December 7th. If you were to go to most college kids studying history, and you just walked on a college campus today. We should do this video, Connor. It would be fascinating. What historically happened on December 7th? And they'd say, many would say, I don't know. I would have no idea. Well, December 7th, of course, was Pearl Harbor, 1941, a day which will live in infamy. The man overseeing the base operations in Hawaii, if I remember correctly, his name was Admiral Husband. Husband Kimmel. My memory serves me right. Now, it's this great metaphor, which is, and it's actually tragic. He was a great guy. He just decided to go golfing on the wrong day. He went golfing on a beautiful Hawaiian morning. And next thing you know, the preemptive strike against the United States occurred, which basically sunk our entire Pacific fleet. Thousands of Americans died and left us so geopolitically and strategically vulnerable. In the hours and days that followed, There was fear that the Japanese would attack California next, that an amphibious ground amphibious invasion of the western part of the United States was imminent. America's reaction to Pearl Harbor showed us the type of country we were. We didn't tolerate it. Even FDR, a left-wing Democrat, rallied the forces domestically and said, we are now going to go to war and we are going to win. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, in Cut 28, said a day that will live in infamy. Play Cut 28.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. As Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy, I have directed that all measures be taken for our defense. But always will our whole nation remember the character of the onslaught against us. I ask Congress declare a state of war between the United States and the Japanese Empire.
The speech is really good. And it said a lot about who we were as a nation, what we were willing to do to defend the homeland. In the days that followed, the happiest man after Pearl Harbor was, of course, the greatest man to live in the 20th century, Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill said, quote, "No American will think it wrong of me if I proclaim to have the United States at our side was to me the greatest joy. I could not foretell the course of events. I do not pretend to have measured the martial might of Japan, but now at this very moment I knew the United States was in the war up to the neck and into the death. So we had won after all." Winston Churchill continued by saying, "England would live, Britain would live, the Commonwealth of Nations and the Empire would live. How long the war would last or in what fashion it would end, no man could tell, nor I at this moment care. Once again, in the long history of our island, we should emerge. However mauled or mutilated, safe and victorious, we should not be wiped out. Our history would not come to an end. We might not even have to die as individuals." Churchill concluded by saying Hitler's fate was sealed. Mussolini's fate was sealed. As for the Japanese, they would have ground. They would be ground to powder. All the rest was merely proper application of an overwhelming force. United, we could subdue everybody else in the world. Many disasters, immeasurable cost and tribulation lay ahead, but there was no doubt about the end. Winston Churchill, the greatest man to live in the 20th century. But what have I told you? That as we remember Pearl Harbor and the greatest generation that stepped up to the plate to storm Normandy Beach, Guadalcanal, Iwo Jima, the Battle of the Bulge, winning a two-front war against existential evil, what if I told you that we had our own form of Pearl Harbor, an epidemiological Pearl Harbor that was launched by the Chinese Communist Party that we might have funded through gain-of-function research? What if I told you that the Chinese coronavirus developed in a laboratory, intentionally or unintentionally unleashed, we may never know, on the Western world and eventually the entire world, was a civilization-changing bioweapon to change our voting laws, our way of life, to have a $3.8 trillion wealth transfer? And how did we react? Did we have a day that will live in infamy? Have we held China accountable for the damage, the death, the destruction that the epidemiological Pearl Harbor, that was the Chinese Corona Fauci virus, inflicted on the American people? No, instead, we've done the opposite. Instead, China has only grown stronger. And by the way, people are calling everything a new Pearl Harbor. They say January 6th is Pearl Harbor. They say the only appropriate Pearl Harbor analogy is the Chinese coronavirus that was unleashed on the entire world. Instead of bombing the Pacific Fleet, instead of trying to cripple our military advantage, instead it was an invisible enemy, one that went to the hearts and the minds, the psyche, the fears, the anxieties of an ever anxious nation. A rise in suicide, mental health, depression, triple masking, vaccinating children, an entire way of life completely and totally being remade by an invisible epidemiological Pearl Harbor by the Chinese Communist Party. And so we look at Pearl Harbor, we look at the rallying cry and the unification that we had against the Japanese, and we were ready for war and we won. What happened? Where is the commission to try to hold the Chinese Communist Party accountable? Where is the widespread uniform agreement that the Chinese Communist Party should not be able to send their students to U.S. universities? Where is the agreement that the Chinese Communist Party shouldn't be able to own farmland, especially near military strategic bases? Where is the agreement that the Chinese Communist Party shouldn't be doing business with the National Basketball Association or with Hollywood or with Wall Street? You want to see the difference between where America is today and versus 1941, December 7th, a day that will live in infamy? The difference is that when we were attacked on December 7th, Americans couldn't care less about profits, momentary pleasure, or plastic being imported from other countries. They prioritized their nation to be first. But when the Chinese Communist Party launched an epidemiological Pearl Harbor against you, your loved ones, your family, and change the American way of life and trying to change it permanently and shred and put the U.S. Constitution into destruction, why has that not been the same reaction? That's an interesting question to explore. Now, I do know there's a remnant of Americans that want to respond, that want to actually hold the Chinese Communist Party accountable and punch back twice as hard. But that would require something that we've decided to destroy in America. Courage, strength, amongst many other things. And we remember the sacrifices in Pearl Harbor. But why are we ignoring the Pearl Harbor of our generation? Do you want to be a hero for the holidays? How about getting your loved ones a new iPhone? That's right. Pure Talk has iPhone 12 starting at $479 through the end of the year. And yes, they have 13s too. If you switch to Pure Talk, you get great nationwide 5G coverage. Yes, the same coverage as the big guys. But the average family saves over $800 a year. Now that's just smart. There is no need to overpay for Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile. Plus, with Pure Talk's 30-day risk-free guarantee, you have nothing to lose. Unlimited talk, text, and 6 gigs of data is just $30 a month. And like I said, the iPhone 12 is just $479 this month. Go to puretalk.com to find out exactly the plan and phone that's right for you. Use their savings calculator to see how much your family will save. Just go to puretalk.com and enter promo code Kirk to save an additional 50% off your first month and save on a new phone. That's puretalk.com, promo code Kirk. Disclaimer, some restrictions apply. See website for details. The Democrats call everything Pearl Harbor nowadays. Cut 33, Chuck Schumer compared January 6th to Pearl Harbor. Play cut 33.
President Franklin Roosevelt set aside December 7th, 1941, as a day that will live in infamy. Unfortunately, we can now add January 6th, 2021, to that very short list of dates in American history that will live forever in infamy.
Bernie Sanders says that the climate war that we're in, we've already experienced Pearl Harbor. Climate war? What? Play cut 34.
But what I don't agree with you, Chris, on is whether or not we have seen Pearl Harbor. I think you've seen the Bahamas. You've seen Katrina. You've seen drought and floods all over the world.
And Steve Cohen said that, well, January 6th, we are under attack just as much on January 6th as Pearl Harbor. Play cut 35.
January 6th is a day like that. It's a day that should be remembered in America because our democracy was at stake. This was an attack on our democracy as much as Pearl Harbor was an attack on our country.
So I guess, yeah, next to Fredo Cuomo, he's no longer employed. I suppose the real question here is, if the Democrats, Schumer, Sanders, and Cohen are so generously describing everything as Pearl Harbor, from what happened on January 6th to climate change, why are they hesitant to call the Chinese coronavirus an epidemiological Pearl Harbor against America? What is it about America that makes them so hesitant, or what is it about China that makes them so hesitant to try to draw the line when it comes to America? Something that Americans do not want to admit is that we're already in a non-kinetic war with China. They're not an adversary. They are not a competitor. They're not a rival. It's not like Alabama versus Auburn. It's not like Oklahoma State versus Oklahoma. They're an enemy. They're a sworn enemy of America. And they knew that we would react in a very passive way. And part of this, of course, is we have decided in our tone, in our language, in our posture to become far less, I mean, the politically correct way to say it is strong, but let's just call it what it is, less masculine and more feminine in the way that we approach geopolitics. And I've said this before, a country can become too masculine. You need a balance of both. You need a balance between bullheadedness and a dedication and a focus on a goal and also on patience and hopefully a little nuance. For example, a country that becomes too masculine ends up being autocratic. A country ends up becoming too feminine ends up being chaotic, ends up being there's no strength at all whatsoever. There's no direction. That balance is incredibly necessary. And I'm not saying either a pejorative or a negative or a positive. What I am saying, though, is if we did not have this all-out assault on the American male, which has been happening in the last 30, 40 years, I wonder if our response to the Chinese Communist Party would be any different. The Chinese coronavirus has killed more Americans than did the combat deaths in every single war America's ever fought combined. Now, by the way, I think that the deaths from COVID could have been massively mitigated, not from mask wearing or lockdowns or vaccines, but from vitamin D levels. We did a whole episode on that. You guys should check it on the Charlie Kirk Show podcast. Ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, azithromycin. But if you just look at the numbers, 787,000 people have died from the Chinese coronavirus. Yet Steve Cohen and Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, they don't want to call China for what they've done. Imagine for a second, Japan bombs Hawaii and you have a bunch of members of Congress in 1941 and say, hold on a second, we might have deserved it, okay? Some people did something. So the Japanese needed oil. We shouldn't have done an embargo against them. Do you see how far we have fallen and how much things have changed? I think this is an 80% issue. I really do. I think 80% deep down people want America to be self-sufficient, and I think they want the Chinese Communist Party to suffer for the damage they have done to them. Every story needs a bad guy. Every story needs a villain. And do you notice that we have been telling the Chinese coronavirus story from the CDC, the FDA, and the White House without the true villain, the true culprit? This virus came from China. It was created in their laboratory. They lied about it, and whether it was unleashed intentionally or unintentionally, it's irrelevant. It was an attack on America. Look, we all complain about the woke industrial complex, the woke Marxists that are running our schools, that are running media, and yes, also running our banks. You see, look, the real estate market, it's red hot. Tyler, he just sold his home, and he said, Charlie, I've never seen the market so unbelievable. So maybe you want to go buy a home. Maybe they're taking advantage of low interest rates. With all the economic uncertainty underway, people need to invest in real stuff. So here's a rule of thumb. We here are a solution-based show. So if you don't like the woke nonsense, stop using the woke banks. It's that simple. No more Wells Fargo. No more JP Morgan. No more Goldman Sachs. No more big bank culture. Instead, I have these two great friends, and they do a great job. It's Andrew and Todd, Andrew Del Rey and Todd Avakian. They love the Lord. They are Christians. They are honest. They are straight shooters. And they are on a mission to make sure that you guys can refinance but be told the truth. Look, when I took out mortgages for the properties that I have, it was one of the worst experiences I've ever been through. Yeah, some of the people were very nice, but I could tell you the bank itself was just so bureaucratic and hard to work with. My producer, Andrew, is working right now with Andrew and Todd to fight against the woke banking culture. And he tells me that they're part counselors, part financial counselors, planners, and they're really helping him. So here's the thing. Andrew and Todd are mortgage bankers. They're not brokers. That means Andrew and Todd and their team can take care of your loan personally from start to finish. You'll likely actually talk to Andrew and Todd yourself. So right now, maybe you're walking or you're like, I want to refinance the home, or maybe I'm under the process. Stop it. No more Wells Fargo. They're funding $1 billion to BLM Incorporated. Drives me nuts. Bank of America shut off a U.S. Senate candidate running who's running in Senate in Delaware, just shut off their bank account. Instead, let's support the good guys. I know a lot of you right now say, Charlie, I want to support the good guys. Let's do it together, okay? So here's how you do it. Go to andrewandtodd.com. That's pretty easy to remember, right? Andrew, Todd, andrewandtodd.com, or call 888-888-1172. That's 888-888-1172, and say, hey, I want to talk to Andrew and Todd. Charlie Kirk told me to call. In fact, I just had this unbelievable meeting with them. We talked theology. We talked the church. They're conservative. They're unbelievable. And all you have to do is call them up. Just go to andrewandtodd.com, call 888-888-1172. That's 888-888-1172, and say, Andrew or Todd, I would like to speak to you. Charlie Kirk sent me. And I'm telling you, you'll probably get them on the phone unless they're traveling or handling some crisis. They take a lot of the phone calls themselves. Great people. andrewandtodd.com. No more woke banks. Let's work together to crush the back of woke Wall Street and support the good guys. andrewandtodd.com. With us right now is the author of The Chief's Chief, a friend of mine, Chief of Staff to President Donald Trump. They call him former Chief of Staff, but Chief of Staff in my book, Mark Meadows. Mark, how you doing today?
I'm great, Charlie. It's great to be with you. And thank you for always bringing freedom to the American people. It's great to be with you.
Of course. And you can come on anytime, Mark. You're a great friend and you do a wonderful job. The book is The Chief's Chief. Everyone go check it out. It's terrific. Mark, you made some news this morning. If I'm reading it correctly, I want to hear it in your words, because I saw it in some untrusted, you know, New York Times thing, that you're making a decision not to cooperate with the January 6th committee. Please tell us what's going on.
Well, we've been working for weeks, as you know, Charlie, trying to find an accommodation so that I could share and talk to the committee about certain non-privileged, and I want to stress that, non-privileged information. I've always told the president and Congress that the executive privilege that President Trump has claimed would be honored. It's not mine to waive. Quite frankly, it's not Congress's to waive either. And so we've been working with them over the last several weeks. It became very apparent over the last couple of days, even after we've given them some documents, that not only did they plan to continue to ask about areas that should be covered under executive privilege, but then they sent a subpoena, unbeknownst to us, sent a subpoena to a third-party telephone provider seeking documents, all of my documents on my phone. And we just came to a point where we felt like that our spirit of accommodation was not being reciprocated on an equal fashion. And some of the comments that the committee has made about others, whether they're claiming other witnesses or potential witnesses and their claims, it sounds like they've already made up their mind on what the outcome will be. And so reluctantly, our counsel recommended that we don't show up for a voluntary interview this week.
Well, and so just our audience might be wondering, what does that mean then, right? Will there be a contempt vote? And then also just talk about, in your opinion, does this have precedent, what this committee is trying to do?
Well, I don't think this committee, the precedent that is before us is certainly anything that's being embraced by this committee. When we see it, it appears to be more of a partisan outgoing effort from a partisan standpoint. We know that we've had everyone on the committee has voted for Donald Trump to be impeached. And yet somehow they're supposedly going to have an open mind as it involves all these other questions coming in. And so I think, Charlie, the real tough part of that, what does it mean? We'll have to cross that bridge when we come to it. Will they hold me in contempt? There have been members who have suggested that they will do so. I believe that ultimately this is something that the courts will will and should have to weigh in on. And certainly when there's a disagreement between parties, the courts have been the proper place to resolve that. So hopefully that will happen here before they take a strong action of contempt. But, you know, that's Congress's purview. And honestly, you know, they're I'm sure having those discussions as we speak.
Yeah. And so I suppose the, you know, the issue that a lot of people are trying to work through is what is the check on a committee potentially that might abuse their power? And that's a question that hasn't always been, you know, kind of sorted out in the courts, at least from my understanding. There was a ruling way back in the 60s, if I'm not mistaken, around a veterans group around draft dodging. And the courts basically ruled that Congress can get whatever it wants. What have the courts decided in regards to this? Because in some ways, this is unprecedented.
Well, it is unprecedented. And I think, Charlie, probably the biggest thing is that with a chief of staff and somebody that is that close to the president, and honestly, those discussions that a president and his chief of staff would have, whether it's me or any other president with any other chief of staff, you know, it would be a real chilling event to think that every new president can waive the executive privilege that came before them. I don't know that really any chief of staff and a president would want to have candid conversations if they're going to be subject to a very broad, and I would stress a very broad congressional subpoena. You know, the subpoena to the third party carrier that I received over the weekend, honestly, you know, didn't have really any bounds. It was every communication, you know, every provider, every person, and obviously there are conversations that even now I would have with attorneys. And so there are other privileges invoked other than just executive privileges. So I think the scope of where they're going is far broader. The good thing is I'm not an attorney, but I've hired attorneys to look at this, and hopefully, you know, the court will be glad to weigh in on this.
Yeah, I hope so. So also, Mark, and again, Mark Meadows has a great new book out, The Chief's Chief. Everyone check it out. You've been kind of teasing that Trump might run in 2024. What do you have to share with the audience?
You know, I can tell you I don't speak for the president or his campaign, so this is not official. But if you read the book in the final chapter, I think you only draw one conclusion, that I'm expecting another 4 years of Donald Trump's amazing accomplishments, and that I believe that he's going to run. Certainly the things that he's doing would suggest that he's putting together not only the team, but he's putting together really the policy initiatives, staying engaged in the debate. I mean, you know it, Charlie, you were just with him over the weekend, staying involved in the debate and basically making sure that America and the American people are top priority. And what a change it would be from Joe Biden and what we've been seeing for the last 10 months.
Yeah, no kidding. And so let's talk about the midterms. We talked about this last time you were on, Mark, and I think that might have been before Virginia. I can't remember the timing. What have you seen recently kind of on the ground, grassroots, that's giving you hope that this Congress is going to turn over, we could fire Nancy Pelosi and take back the Senate?
Listen, I'm getting more and more bullish each day, and it has nothing to do with Kamala Harris's or Joe Biden's sinking poll numbers, although indeed those are welcome barometers of what may have happened. Let me tell you what I'm seeing is a whole lot of buyer's remorse out there from unaffiliated voters and even Democrat voters who voted for Joe Biden, believing that he was going to be able to be a leader. And what they're seeing now on the world stage is not only that he's not a leader here domestically, but he's not a leader internationally as well. You know, when you see what's happening with Russia and China and just the very, very aggressive behavior that we're seeing, that's not the kind of thing that you would have seen with President Trump.
Yeah, no kidding. And so what what I'm hearing from a lot of people on the front lines is they are, you know, optimistic that, you know, Republicans can take back control, but they want to really focus on the primary campaigns. Are there any candidates in particular that you and the president are really focused on, especially when it comes to some of these impeachment votes? Can talk about some of the endorsements President Trump has made recently. I want to make sure our audience is aware of that.
Yeah, so President Trump is staying unbelievably laser focused on making sure that we take back both the Senate and the House. And I think that we will take back both. Obviously, the Senate is a much closer call. You've got to encourage, hopefully, Senator Johnson to run again. You've got to look at Nevada. You've got to look at Arizona, Georgia, but I do believe that we can essentially get one seat additional. Here's the thing is if you look at President Trump and those that have voted either for the January 6th commission or those that have voted for impeachment, and more on the impeachment vote than anything else, they've sent a very clear signal that they are not really for the America First agenda. I know that you've been involved. I know that you from your standpoint and outreach have been trying to make sure that we get those MAGA candidates there. But the president, when he was in, whether it's in Washington State or in North Carolina or Florida or any of the others, what he's doing is he's sending a clear message. Not only is he all in personally with his endorsement, but what he is doing is trying to make sure people like you and me are willing to engage and willing to make sure that they have a backbone of steel, you know, and I'm confident, in fact, very, very confident that Speaker Pelosi will have to retire her gavel. That's why you're seeing so many Democrats, senior Democrats. You don't normally you get one or two senior Democrats, but you've got people that are leading committees,
like 15,
that are
16.
Are actually,
it's a lot.
Yeah, retiring. And when you see some of the most powerful Democrats here in Washington, D.C. retiring, they see the handwriting on the wall. The American people can't be fooled for too long. And so I think 2022 will be a resounding success, much like Virginia and much like, the truck driver from New Jersey.
Christmas is here, everybody, and you're probably looking for perfect gifts. I know the team behind Good Ranchers. In fact, I just hung out with them over this last weekend. They're so great. They're phenomenal people. They love the Lord. They love their family. They're great people. And you need to get Good Ranchers because I could tell you right now, you got to support our country, support the Good Ranchers, and also, I know you got to eat. From your parents to siblings to friends to coworkers, everyone in between, everyone loves delicious cuts from Good Ranchers, and they deliver right to your door. GoodRanchers.com has a variety box to try yourself or gift this season. Choose the Ranchers Classic for the perfect combo of high-quality beef and tender chicken, or go with the Cowboy to have the ultimate steakhouse experience with black Angus ribeyes, Wagyu burgers, or more. Get $20 off and free shipping on your order with promo code CHARLIE at checkout. Get all your individual and corporate gifts at Good Ranchers today. Go to goodranchers.com/charlie or get $20 off and free express shipping on your order. Good Ranchers is the gift that keeps giving. Go to goodranchers.com/charlie, promo code CHARLIE at checkout. Give a gift they'll remember. Give Good Ranchers. They are terrific. I love Good Ranchers, and you will too. And I'm telling you, give people a gift they'll remember for years to come. Good Ranchers. Box or gift card today, goodranchers.com/charlie. That's goodranchers.com/charlie. So, Mark, how could Republicans screw this up? It just looks so good. What if it goes wrong? Basically, the other way of the question is, what must we do to make sure this continues, and what must we make sure that does not happen, if that makes sense?
It does make perfect sense. Here's what we need to do is two things. We can't screw it up. And by screw it up, here's how we would do that. all of a sudden think that now, because we have polls that are leading our way, that we need to somehow moderate. I can tell you, I saw this in a race with Congressman Dan Bishop in North Carolina. You know, he was in the polls. He was actually behind some. Many of the advisors were saying, you know, distance yourself from Donald Trump. You're in the Charlotte area. And yet that was not who he was. He was actually more of someone who was willing to embrace not only the America First agenda, but all the conservative values that that you and I hold dear. And so, you know, I told him, I said, you know, it's better that you lose engaged in embracing something that you like and that you believe in than it is to pretend like you're somebody else, because people will vote for those that are authentic. That's why Donald Trump got elected to be president of the United States. They wanted somebody who was authentic. And so here's the candidate. Need to be authentic. They need to be transparent. But the other part of it is they need to have a business plan. They can't just show up and think that a good stump speech is going to work it. They've got to actually work a plan. How are they going to do the outreach? They need to do more podcasts, honestly, where you're talking policy, real policy, like you and I do right here, where they actually engage. How else can we make sure that it happens is my good friend Jim Jordan has a book that says Do What You Said You Would Do. You know, it's a great book, but it's also a great concept. When you campaign, you actually have to actually work in Washington, D.C. that same way. And we're starting not only to see that from so many House members, but we're also seeing that when you do what you said you would do, the American people will reward it. Even some Democrats who don't agree with your policy admire the fact that you're willing to say what you believe and act on it.
I will also add that we have to make sure Republicans do not broker an amnesty deal this spring. That's in the cards. I'm hearing it. And that would be a disaster. I mean, it would be the dumbest thing they could possibly do. And also, I want to end with, people are emailing us like crazy right now, freedom@charliekirk.com. Mark, what about election integrity? Are we seeing some improvements? What's going on with that? How can we trust that they're not going to do the shenanigans again?
Well, we need to still stay engaged, and they're right to be emailing you in a big way. I can tell you that a number of us are working on election integrity. I continue to work on election integrity to make sure that not only does your vote count, but that that ballot is sacred from your hand to the ballot box. And what we've done is, sadly, we've kind of ignored it. We've looked at past elections, and some are encouraging just to move on. We need to make sure there's an audit process that's there, not just for the states that we want to call into question, but for every single state, that so when somebody votes, that they can make sure that their vote is legitimate and that it counts. And I can tell you there's real progress being made, but we've got a long way to go, Charlie, and the work is not done. So we need to be vigilant leading up to 2022 and 2024 on election day.
Yeah, and the other side, they were so strategic. I mean, you look at Georgia, and I mean, Brian Kemp deserves the primary challenge he's getting against a really good man who is a former senator. You knew David Perdue. He was a great guy. He is a great guy. Yeah, and he should have been a senator. And honestly, if we would have taken election integrity as seriously as Stacey Abrams took election corruption, Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue would have been senators, and Trump would have won Georgia by 60, 70, 80,000 votes. When you go from 240,000 mail-in ballots to 1.2 million mail-in ballots with no infrastructure and a lower signature verification threshold for a consent decree that was privately signed that no one knew in March of 2020, meanwhile, you have ballots going everywhere because of the COVID stuff, it's a tragedy. And I'm glad the base is not losing focus on that. That's a really important thing. Mark, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. The Chief's Chief. Everyone go check it out. I enjoy always talking to you, Mark. You're a great American. Thank you.
Same here. Thanks, Charlie. Take care. God bless.
Talk soon. God bless. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts, freedom@charliekirk.com. And if you want to support our show, go to charliekirk.com/support. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.